right, what's worship?
Worthy of our praise.
Yeah. Showing a worth of praise. Like I said, I try to put something different every time. So paying tribute to the worth of God, His excellencies, His nature, His authority, His power, just who He is as a whole. What if in worship we do not do what He says to do?
It's not worship then.
Why not?
Because it doesn't show His worth.
All right, it's in vain.
Right.
Doesn't show His worth.
To us, it's worship, not to Him.
Okay, that's a good way to put it. Now, if I say I'm going to worship God, then I've got to do it according to how He wants me to do it, or that makes me contrary to that. I'm saying that I'm doing something, but I'm actually doing something else, which is the definition of hypocrisy, right? So, when Jesus tells the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 15, that they are hypocrites, this is what He means when He describes, "In vain do they worship Me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men." They're given the fruit of their lips, and their heart is far from Him. So, with what they say. They are doing. We looked Wednesday night at music as worship, and we spent most of our class just looking at the pattern, the fact that God presents a pattern for how He wants things to be accomplished. That is inclusive of worship. It's inclusive of salvation. It's inclusive of choices we make. It's inclusive of marriage. Every aspect of our lives and His creation, God has placed an importance on it and given us a pattern or a standard by which we can compare our lives to that. So there are eight. That's right. There are eight different verses in the New Covenant that deal with worship, and they form for us the pattern that we talked about on Wednesday night about music as worship. And all of them mention this idea of singing, fruit of lips, in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 15 is the only deviation from that. In James 5:13, your translation may say sing psalms, or sing praises, depending on which one you're looking from. That's the New American Standard, says sing praises. And so all of the occurrences that we see of either command statements or people that are participating in this type of worship are doing so with singing. In Psalm 88, this is the first one we're going to look at. It's kind of off topic, but it deals with the first argument that's used to justify playing an instrument of music in worship. And so in that argument, it will be made that solo includes playing on an instrument. Now, before we deal with Psalm 88, does solo, the original word solo, include playing an instrument?
It could.
It could. All right, so the first definition you look up is to pluck or pull. In the Old Testament, did they utilize mechanical instruments, music, in worship?
Yes.
Yes, and we're going to look at that as part of our study together this morning. What I asked you to do in the lesson on the very first is to write the definition of solo from Thayer's. Now, Thayer's is to Greek what Webster's is to English. That's about the best way I know to give a comparison between the two. Webster's Dictionary is highly regarded as maybe the most complete of dictionaries to define words in English. Whether or not we agree with all the definitions is not the point, but just it's a complete work of the English language in defining words. Thayer's is the equivalent of that, if you will, in Greek. And so solo, a Greek word, we will go find the definition of that in Thayer's. Okay? Psalm 88. Now, does anybody in here other than me American Standard in verse 13, it says, "But idea, my prayer comes before you." Okay, let me read from the King James Version. Thee. In the morning shall my prayer prayer comes before you, but in the King James Version, my prayer prevent thee. Okay, let's look at another one along this same thought, and that is Psalm 119 and verse 147. Psalm 119 and verse 147, 176 verses, so closer to the end as you're turning the pages of Psalm 119. Psalm 119 and 147. The New American Standard puts it, I will rise before dawn and cry for help. I wait for your words. Okay, so I will rise before dawn and cry for help. So Psalm 119 and 147 in the King James Version puts it, I prevented the dawning of the morning and cried. I hoped in thy word. Again, this word prevent is put in there. And that's the word that we're kind of working on this morning to begin with. Okay, last one is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 15. Okay, New American Standard. For this we say to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord will not precede those who have fallen asleep. Okay? The old King James Version, 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 15. For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which are asleep. In our current 2021 definition, what does the word prevent mean?
Stop. Keep from happening.
Okay, we would all pretty much agree that that's it. And Webster's agrees with you. Okay, actually, that's our first definition. We keep from happening. If I apply the definition of prevent into these phrases, these verses, then in Psalm 88, the morning shall my prayer prevent thee. We're going to prevent God. We're going to stop God from existing. I prevent the dawning of the morning. I stopped it. I stopped the morning from dawning. None of us had the ability to do that. And here we're talking about the resurrection in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and in verse 15. And this idea that there are those who will be already dead, those who will be alive when the Lord comes. And so he says that there's this order that's happening. I'm not going to prevent those. I'm not going to stop them. So that doesn't work in those translations, okay? Now, in the time which the King James Version was written, the word prevent meant something different. And I mentioned this to you a class or two ago, that if you go to Webster's, they've actually become very good at this, I think, online, if you go look at Webster's Dictionary, about what words used to mean compared to what words do mean today. So they put the fourth definition, they'll put in italics, they'll put archaic. Okay, and so archaic, an older definition of the word. So Webster's puts on number four, to be in readiness for, to meet or satisfy in advance, or to act ahead of, or to go or arrive before. So to go before, to arrive before, to act before, to do something in advance. That's what it used to mean, this word prevent, archaically. Not too many years ago. Now, if we take that and we put it into the definitions of these verses up here, then it matches up with what we were reading in a more, if you will, modern definition, although the New American Standard's getting a little age on it now, at least the one that I'm reading from, they have a 2020 version. So if I take that, let's take any of the four will work, actually. So first, let's are asleep. Now, the New American Standard translates it that they will not precede those. What does precede mean?
Go ahead of.
Go before. So what the translators have done, more modern, if you will, is that we're selecting words that have this meaning today for meaning today. Okay, when was the King James, original King James?
1611.
Nobody uses the 1611. If you see it on a sign, they're not using 1611. If you had a 1611, you couldn't read it. The F's look like S's, all that. There is a, now, Don't throw anything at me. The 1769 version is the one that's most commonly used. That's what this one is that I have. It is nothing different from the 1611 to it except to change those things for readability. You know, if you go read the Declaration of Independence, it's difficult to read because of some of those same ideas, F's and S's and those sort of things. So it's got a little age on it, got a couple hundred years, and this word prevent meant something different when they translated it. It was a good word for translation then. If you were to have, I have one here, obviously, a King James Version. They actually try to help with that. A lot of the publishers do by putting some notes in here to help you with it. So, for example, in 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 15, they put a footnote here for coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which are asleep. And under prevent, they put proceed. So they try to give you an idea that this word means something different today than it meant back then. Here's my point. That doesn't help us with singing. This is just to show this point that words change in meaning over time. We've seen words do that just in my lifetime. Words have meant something 10 years ago can mean something different today. You know, you cancel something, that means something different. It meant something different 2 years ago than it does today. Words tend to change quite often. So if we take solo, which is in Thayer's, the first definition is the one that Eric was telling us about. So it's to pluck or to pull out. And if you look at the second definition, I just put the bolded words from Thayer's. What Thayer's does, he puts the definitions, they're in bold, and then he'll put some comments around it to try to kind of help with it. So these are the bold ones. To touch or strike the chord, to twang the strings, to play on a stringed instrument, to play the harp, to sing to the music of the harp. Okay. But this last one is one I'm kind of interested in. It doesn't make all of my point, but it does help. And he puts in the NT, that's New Testament. In the New Testament, this word would mean to sing a hymn or to celebrate the praises of God in song. So what Thayer says is this word solo goes through some change. He actually, before this, I didn't put this whole definition, but if you wrote it all or copied and pasted it in your notes, you see it, about how during the Septuagint, remember that's that first Greek translation, Hebrews to Greek, that there's a change that begins to happen with this word. He makes mention of that there in his definitions. And so what he's saying, the only point I'm trying to get from this, is that he says, Thayer's, he's just a man, that in the New Testament, it means to sing a hymn and to celebrate the praises of God. Let's see, I'm curious, on question 4, I asked you to research how many translators or scholars worked on the King James Version, the American Standard Version, Revised Standard Version, New American Standard, and when these translations were complete. Let's start King James Version. We already said when this was translated.
70.
Not the New King James, the original. King James Version. 1611. Right. 1611. Anybody find out how many scholars worked on that? 47. That's what I found too. We'll take it. I wasn't there in 1611, so going to take their word on that one. So 47 scholars, okay? The American Standard, the old original American Standard. Again, a good translation. I have a copy on my desk. Can't read it. There's some of the same reasons as King James. Hard to read. When was that translated? We know there's a 2020. 1901 is when it was published, so we'll go with that. And they utilized, they said, 101 scholars for that. All right, let's keep going. The Revised Standard Version.
Another 32 scholars is what I looked at.
Well, you may have it right. I found 54, but I don't know. Maybe it's different. Yeah, I got 52 is when it was published, and 54 scholars. At the same?
Well, I got 32 scholars with 50 representatives.
Okay, the 50 representatives, which will make make a little more sense when I say the New King James Version in a second. New American Standard, I'm going with the most current, not 2020, but prior to that, most kind of well-circulated is 95. And so when they changed from 1901 to 1995, they used 42 more scholars. New King James Version, when did that come out? They started working on it in the 70s. It came out in 82, I think it was. And they utilized, I put 130 there. But if you look at the kind of the information about that, 130, they say scholars, pastors, theologians. I don't know how many of those are language people compared to church leaders, that sort of thing. As point, what does it matter? Okay, if I make this argument, if I say, and this is just the first one in our list, that we're going to include musical instruments because solo includes playing on a musical instrument, I'm not a Greek scholar. I don't claim to be. I'm going to refer to things like Thayer's, and I'm going to refer to translations and those sort of things. And most of the time, and I don't mean this to be harsh, I'm just being level honest, most people making the argument of this aren't Greek scholars either. So what the Greek word means, I don't know. And I don't know anybody in the room, maybe a Greek scholar. I don't know if you want to admit to it or not. There's a couple of hundred, at least, folks that translated these different translations that we have today that at least claim to have or have some sort of knowledge, study, or whatever it might be in the Greek language to sit down and discuss what these words would mean and what would be an appropriate English word to translate that to today. It's used, yes?
Just a note. Can I bring in here?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Two things. One, just a note in history. The scholars of King James era were not the first to translate
right.
the Bible into English. William Tyndale.
Right.
And it was the Tyndale Bible that got them started in space.
Right.
But when the King James scholars, when they finished the work, they compared it to William Tyndale.
Right.
His Bible.
Right.
And it was uncanny about how close the King James scholars translated the word literally almost exactly like we did that. Way.
Right.
King James scholars are the first.
Right. They are not. You have the Geneva Bible between those two as well, which was the first printed Bible in English as well, or massively printed. King James gets a lot of, it's a whole class on its own as to how they went about their process and all those sort of things.
So point number two is that I'm confused about the definition of solid. All right? In Thayer's definition, the pluck, the strum, or whatever, that's a musical instrument. It also says to sing to that song. So which came first? In order to sing that song, it has to be words first.
Right.
Right. So I'm confused at when you say it includes playing on an instrument.
It did.
Can you have one without the other?
You could, just as a word in of itself, you could have that, and that's what Thayer's tries to do. Like I hate to have to do it, but just for size on the slide and for class, he puts a lot of different comments in between those about those. So he starts with to touch or strike the chord. It's the same as saying prayer today. I could say prayer today and it not be a religious term. And we associate a religious term with it, but it by definition doesn't have to be a religious term. Psalm or solo doesn't. Those definitions that he's got, he talks about how that changes over time from just association with instruments to singing with instruments, and he covers kind of a time period of transition of that word. And unfortunately, I don't have all of that definition.
Well, even the translators or the printers of our Bible call these psalms. And like David, he told his orderly, "Hey, I've just written this work. Take it over to the chief musician and tell him to write some music for it."
Right. Right. Yeah. So psalm is the noun verb of solo. Solo is the verb form. So the the participating in that, the action that's associated with Psalm between them. All right, so these different scholars, and just getting back to that point of me not knowing about Greek or being a student of Greek, but I think we should all agree, in at least in part, that these guys know a whole lot more of Greek than I do, and probably more Greek than the rest of us do as well, and how they translate it. So look in Romans 15. Yep, that's where I want to go. Romans 15. Like I say, the noun verb is found more often in your Bibles, and it's translated psalm or song, depending on your translation most often. But this word solo is the act of, or the verb form of this as well. So in Romans 15 and in verse 9, the word solo is here. It says, "For the Gentiles to glorify God in his mercy, as it is written, therefore I will give praise to you among the Gentiles, and I will sing to your name." Which one of those words is solo?
Sing.
So they determined in translating, all these translators determined to translate that word sing there in Romans chapter 15 and verse 9. We'll go quickly through the next couple. 1 Corinthians 14 verse 15, which is probably where it tells you to go next on your chain reference. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 15. Says, what's the outcome again? What's the outcome then? I will pray with the spirit. I will pray with the mind also. I will sing with the spirit. And I will sing with the mind also. It's in this verse twice, and it is sing. So they determined to translate solo in both of these verses as sing. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 19. Ephesians 5:19, speaking to one another, psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing, making melody in your heart to the Lord. The verb form of solo is which word, or words, actually, here? It's actually not singing. I know, that's a shocking one.
Making melody.
Making melody. So there's two words. It's a redundancy that Paul uses here of words associated with this. And so they try to differentiate in the translation. I made mention to you on Wednesday that the new CSV version that just came out puts music there, and that carries with it its own set of reasons and issues as to why they put that there. But the making melody, the singing is not solo. The making melody is the solo here in this one. And then finally, James chapter 5. He is to sing praises. James chapter 5, verse 15. So if anyone among you is suffering, he is to pray. Anyone cheerful, he is to sing praises. And here's my point. It's the last thing we'll say about this particular section. Here are these. We've got Thayer says that this word changes over time in the New Testament. It's associated with singing. Again, somebody that knows Greek better than I do. And here are these scholars. I'll hone in for a second on those for the New American Standard and the King James Version. Work on those two translations alone are many of them from different religious groups that would utilize mechanical instruments in worship. All of these guys translate these words in the New Testament as sing. They don't translate it to play or something of that nature. And so I think it gives some credence to the Greek word solo and its need to be translated as sing there in the New Testament. So there are well over 100 workers in the NIV version that also translate this as sing as well, sing songs of praise in James 5, and I will sing 1 Corinthians 14, 15, and sing hymns is the way they put that in Romans chapter 5 and verse 19. So there's that one, and it gives you some more to study than just that there in your lesson sheet. Okay, the next one that you may hear, hopefully we'll be ready to answer this one as well. Well, we ought to have mechanical instruments music because you should use your talent. In worshiping God, you should use your talent. Now, I didn't put a lot of questions for this one on your lesson sheet, but I'll let you kind of answer this one for me. What should we say to that? I've got a talent for utilizing music, and so I'm going to need to play it because I've got this talent.
If you're a talented gymnast, should you do cartwheels in the worship service?
Okay. We don't see that. That's about the best idea that I know of. Then we make all talent just worship then. And I have to be careful about how I associate worship with my talent. I may be talented at something, but my talent is not in and of itself worship. I've mentioned this article about the lady back in the 80s that said she was a stripper and she was stripping for God. That was her talent. Now, I tried to find that article, and so I could not find it yesterday. I said, I really wanted to share some of that with you. So I started trying to find it. And there was an article I have from the New York Post from August 11th of this year, 2021. I don't know how many of you, don't raise your hand and say you know it, because we got others to deal with. There's a website called OnlyFans. If you've heard of that, it's a crude website where people go and sell sexually explicit material to people, pictures of themselves, videos of themselves, and those sort of things. It's really bad. There's this lady that's on there, and the New York Post wrote an article about her, and she's an OnlyFans Christian, she said, and she's doing this for serving God. She said, God gave her the talent of her sexuality, and she can't help but share it with those who want to consensually. And we say, well, that seems kind of out there, doesn't it? But if I'm going to say that my talent should be expressed in worship and my musical talent should be expressed in worship, I have a hard time differentiating between the two to say that's the one's wrong and one's right. I know there are differences. Don't throw something at me. I mean, I know there's differences between the two as far as just what's happening, but talent's talent sort of deal, and I know it kind of left field out there just a little bit. You got second. Sorry. Eric's going first, and I'm going to turn to Hebrews 7 if y'all want to turn while Eric's talking, or you can listen to Eric, whichever one.
our children, we homeschool our first two children, and at their graduation ceremony at Michaela's, one of her co-graduates or whatever did a dance, an interpretive dance, to the Lord. That was her praise to God. And I did not see any praise there. It was not suggested, thankfully, but that's what they said. This girl wants to share her worship of God with you. Yeah. Here it is.
Yeah, I've seen, there's some woodworkers in the room, and I'll pick on Ricky, because he won't throw anything at me, for sure. He's got a ball. But Ricky's a really good woodworker. Well, we'll just he's got talent for it. We'll get him up here and get him to do some of that for us and show us how to do it. So, well, that's different. And it is. But if any talent is done to worship God, then I can do anything that's a talent. I know my example of the lady that's selling pornographic images of herself is far left field, but where do we draw the line and say that talent's worship, but that talent's not?
That's not new. Corinth had that problem.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. With temple prostitutes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. In Corinth, we've touched on this passage many times recently, which is, First Corinthians talking about the spiritual gifts and worship service.
Yeah.
And Paul tells them, if you have the gift of speaking in tongues, but you don't have somebody there to translate, you don't talk. Mm-hmm. So that's not only a talent that you have, it's a talent that's been directly given to you by the Holy Spirit.
Right.
Okay. And here you have this talent that is incredible.
Yeah.
And you're not to exhibit that unless
it's regulated.
Regulated in this way.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's the same point I was going back from Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 14. Jesus was not a Levite. He was from which tribe?
Judah.
And according to Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 14, why could a man from Judah not serve?
Moses spoke nothing concerning the priesthood regarding that.
God didn't say anything about it. Okay? Does God say that you should use your talents and work? I've given you a talent, you must use it. Well, we just see from Calvin's example, 1 Corinthians chapter 14, there's regulations about what he's giving them there as to what they should use or not.
To be edifying.
Yeah. The Lord spoke nothing about using our talents to authorize something else in worship to God. So I will just refer back to what we said on Wednesday about what he has said, and we'll kind of stick with that. All right, the next one there, I think we've got time for one more, and it would be this. Well, the Bible doesn't say thou shalt not have instrumental music. And I don't know why every time I write these that I write it in King James form, but it was in the lesson book that way, so I put it in on the PowerPoint that way too. And thou shalt not have it. And so here's the argument that's given, that God did not specifically forbid instrumental music in worship in the New Testament. Is that true? It is true. As far as I know, God did not say that. Even in the King James, that statement I don't find in the Bible. Okay, so turn with me to Exodus chapter 25 then. Exodus 25. It's been a couple of years since we studied Exodus, but we're getting into the regulation of how to serve God. They're getting into the regulation of civil laws as well. We're talking about worship here in this context because they're going to be building the Ark of the Covenant. They're going to be building the lampstand. They're working on the tabernacle. And so these are all aspects that are going to be used in worship to God. And so in Exodus 25 and verse 9, it says, according to the pattern that I'm going to show you as the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furniture, just so you shall construct it. So how did God want the tabernacle built?
To his specifications.
To his specifications, okay? Verse 40, it said, after he goes through specifications, he says, see that you make them after the pattern for them which was shown to you on the mountain. So after the pattern, chapter 26 and verse 30, says, then you shall erect the tabernacle according to its plan, which you've been shown on the mountain. Guess what? Chapter 39, he says, again, he says, according to all that the Lord has commanded Moses, so they did. In chapter 39, 42, the sons of Israel did all the work according to all that the Lord had commanded them, commanded Moses. Moses examined all the work, and behold, they had done it just as the Lord had commanded. This they had done, so Moses blessed them. And then chapter 40, verse 16, says, thus Moses did according to all that the Lord had commanded him, so he did. So just a pattern is given according to the pattern is continually talked about here. Look in 25, that's why I stopped this there in 25, and verses 31 through 40. This is the regulation for how they were to make the lampstand, okay? It says, then you shall make a lampstand pure gold. The lampstand and its base and its shaft are to be made of hammered work. Its cups, its bulbs, its flowers should be made one piece with it. And he goes through all these regulations. This is how you to make the lampstand. Here is question number one. Could Moses made another lampstand, placed it in the tabernacle, and it's still been according to the pattern? I said, make, here's the lampstand I want you to make, and here's how it is to be made.
Well, if it was replacing the one, then yeah.
But that's not the question.
Okay, but make another one? No.
No. You could not take, and you've got a lampstand, and then we're going to put another lampstand in there. God gave this specification. Here's how I want it to be according to the pattern. Does he tell him you can't put one?
No.
He doesn't need to. We talked about a little bit on Wednesday about God's authority when he said in Exodus chapter 12 that you're going to take on the 10th day and you're going to select a lamb. Then it was specific that God said on the 10th day. You couldn't go select your lamb on the 9th. You couldn't go select it on the 11th day. You had to select it on the 10th because that's what God said. That's what the pattern was that was given. It had to be an unblemished male. It had to be a year old. You couldn't go and say, I got a leftover little lamb from last year. And so it's a two-year-old, but it'll work. Couldn't do that. God said it needed to be a year old, not 2 years old. And so he gives his specifics there. He gives his specifics here then as well. So the question is, if God expects his pattern or standard to be followed, does God have a pattern, a standard, or a form in the New Testament for worship?
Yes.
We see that idea. I put some of those verses there for you in your lesson book. The first is Matthew chapter 28. This is at the very end of the book, Matthew 28. And verse 18, Jesus says, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. That's in regards to salvation. He says, go therefore, make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Okay, if we stop there, if there wasn't verse 20, then I guess you'd say the point was not to be well taken. So you just go and baptize them. No, that's not all. Teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. So what are they to do? Go and teach them what? Whatever they want. How to be good fishermen, good sailors. All that Jesus had commanded. Here is what he wants disciples to do. You're going to follow after Jesus, then you're going to do everything that he says to do. A couple more. 2 Timothy chapter 5. And he is trying to encourage him in his work as an evangelist. He says in verse 13, to retain the standard of sound words. You're going to hold on to this. Retain these standard sound words which you have heard from me. In Romans 6 and verse 17, he writes that they were obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you were committed. I was going to get form in there on that one. And then the last one to look at is 2 John and verse 9. 2 John, I don't know why I put 1 and 9 because there's only 1. Where it says, anyone who goes too far, does not abide in the teaching of Christ, does not have God. One who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. And so, I don't need the Bible to tell me not to do something. If it tells me what to do, then that's what I need to be sure that I'm doing. Yes, sir?
This verse is in a previous slide, but Hebrews 13:15 pretty much spells it out.
Yeah.
The fruit of our lips.
The fruit of our lips. That is the one that describes what we are, what we're producing.
That's what God is pleased with.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Good point. Good point. All right. Last one is, we've got a minute because I can just describe. We don't have to look at it, all the verses. It's just an aid. We use a projector, don't we? We put songs on PowerPoint, or we have songbooks. I guess we still got songbooks if we had to use them. May not want to use them. So it's just an aid, and therefore it's not anything to it. I heard a guy say in the debate one time, and you may have heard it, well, maybe you folks over in Church of Christ are just better singers than we are, and we need that to help us stay in tune. I don't know. Maybe it sounds great. That's the argument that's being made, though. It's just an aid, like a projector or songbooks. In 1 Chronicles, we're not going to turn over there and read all of these. Just going to make mention of them. 1 Chronicles 13 and 15, they're getting ready to move the ark. And they get all the people together and they discuss it. David discusses with them the best way to move the ark. And everybody thinks it's a good idea to build a new cart. Ark's probably heavy, and so we'll put that ark on a cart. And, good intentions. Sounds great. Nice new cart. And we'll take it on. But we remember that that's not authorized. What did God authorize for moving the ark?
The
Kohathites, the Levites with poles and the rings on the side. Okay, so Exodus 25, we were there just a moment ago in verse 14. You shall put the poles into the rings on the side of the ark to carry the ark with them. In Numbers 4 and verse 15, I've got all those in your lesson sheet too. He says specifically the sons of Kohath are to carry, and you see in Numbers chapter 7, verse 9, it's going to be carried on the shoulders. And so, could they have added shoulder pads or gloves? Could Levites put a shoulder pad on when they carried it, the Kohathites? Gloves to carry it? It's not changing the carrying of it, is it? What changed the moving of the ark was putting it on a new cart, not having it be carried by the Kohathites. Okay? 1 Chronicles 15, we'll close with this one because it'll make the last little point here. 1 Chronicles 15. This is the problem. This is when they're solving the problem. They've already figured out that things went awry before this. 1 Chronicles 15 and verse 12. It said to them, "You are the heads of your father's household of the Levites. Consecrate yourselves, both you and your relatives, that you may bring up the ark of the Lord God of Israel to the place I have prepared for it." Why? "Because you did not carry it at the first, the Lord our God made an outburst on us, for we did not seek him according to the ordinance." We didn't do it as God said, and so we tried something new, and we tried this aid, if you will, and it was not acceptable to God. We see this idea here in this text. Look at verse 15. The sons of Levi carried the ark of God on their shoulders with the poles thereon, as Moses had commanded, according to the word of the Lord. When they did it as God wanted to, then God was pleased. So aids, I'm not opposed to aids. We can use projector. We can use psalm books if we want to. It doesn't change what we're doing. Aids to what God's authorized are authorized. That's a good point to make there. All right. Out of time, so there's a few left, and there are actually some that I didn't put on the list. Some of those I'll leave to you. You may mention a few here or there on Wednesday, but I want to focus Wednesday's class a little bit differently, not on authority like we did this morning, but I want to focus it on our songs, the songs we sing and lead, thinking behind some of those, whether or not we agree with them, all that sort of stuff. So work on lesson 12 before Wednesday, and we'll get started with that then.